Hey everyone, if you want to continue to support the ongoing writer's strike, please consider donating to the entertainmentcommunityfund.org. When you make said donation, make sure it's set to TV and film. This is not a strike fund. This is a fund to help people out for those affected by the strike. We at Renegade Animation and Renegade Pop Culture stand with the WGA and whoever else will be on strike in the coming months. With all that said, if you like what we do, please give us a like, a follow, and a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. We are everywhere. Also, support our new Patreon. That way, we can keep doing what we love, and that's talking about animation. And now, on with the show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Renegade Animation on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host this evening. Joining me, as always, is the animation guru himself, Cameron.
Howdy, howdy.
And today we got a pretty interesting episode. We've got reviews for the Netflix series Skull Island, plus the movies Lonely Castle in the Mirror and Deep Sea. Let's move on to our first topic, Skull Island, which is placed somewhere vaguely in the MonsterVerse.
Apparently this TV series takes place way after Kong Skull Island and before Godzilla King of the Monsters. It is set in the 1990s, where we follow a group of scientists on a boat trying to find something. They come across a girl who is out at sea, but, you know, unconscious for whatever reason. And when they pick her up, she becomes hostile when she demands to know where her dog is. They then come across a couple mercenaries and then encounter a giant squid-like monster. The boat is destroyed. A lot of people are killed. And the ones who aren't killed end up washed ashore onto Skull Island. They encounter some other mercenaries, a scientist, and try to find a way off the island and avoid the threats, the giant squid in the water, and King Kong himself.
I had mixed feelings about this show. They're a little more positive now that I can think back a little bit on it. But it's not my favorite show just from this year. Not just from the powerhouse animation, considering all of the action shows that we've gotten so far this year. I do like it, though. I think there's a tone issue. And maybe it's just because we only got the first 8 episodes, which we'll probably get, I would say, in a few months or maybe close to next year. But knowing Netflix, who knows?
I'm going to like assume that we're going to get part 2 in anywhere between like 6 months and a year.
Now, why is it that we cannot find a perfect balance between giant monster stuff and humans? It's either a bunch of focus is put on the super boring humans and not enough on the monsters, and the monster stuff that is there isn't enough to balance it all out. There's too much monster stuff and the humans aren't interesting. Or some kind of mixture of the bunch, because even though it's called Skull Island and we are expecting Kong to be here, he is not in the show a whole lot. So we have to focus on the humans, and that's where the problems come up.
And why is this specifically a problem in an animated series where you don't really have to follow the laws of gravity, physics, nature, etc.? The one episode where Kong is like pretty much the main character, the one with the island girl, that was great because Kong looks amazing and actually gets to emote, unlike in live action where he still has to look somewhat realistic, even though he's a giant ape.
Listen, I get it. We need to have some human drama to connect us from point A to point B when we can get to the big, scary monster encounters. But the biggest problem was that everyone is just way too quippy. Everyone has a one-liner or a snappy comeback. And it results in a lot of characters feeling fairly forgettable for a majority of these first eight episodes. I liked a lot of the drama with the female character who's voiced by Mae Whitman, and they do build up her connection with the scientist that they encounter on the island, who's voiced by the great Betty Gilpin. But Annie's and Irene, the two characters that they both play, their chemistry is extremely standoffish, and there just wasn't enough substance between the characters to make up for the fact that the monster encounters are few and far between.
I think for me, part of it is lowered expectations. I went into this thinking I wasn't going to like any of the characters, but I warmed up to them probably a lot sooner than you did. Though I think I messaged you pretty sarcastically saying like, oh, this series is great. All the characters are just as confused as the audience.
That's another thing. The characters might not know what's going on, and that's fine, but we know. So it becomes a fairly tedious slog till we get to that point where the characters and the audience are on the same page. And I get that Kong is not the most interesting kaiju. He's one of the most iconic for a reason. But I get why some people just say he's a giant gorilla. That's all that he is. Okay, but while we are waiting for him, we have to focus on the humans. And there are definitely some moments that I dug, like when the three kids, Charlie, Annie, and Mike, are stuck in the ground and are about to encounter, if I remember correctly, some ant creatures. They have some fun banter, and there's a point later on during the halfway point of these first eight episodes where Charlie has to team up with the giant kaiju dog that Annie befriends on the island. And those moments are great. There's just the giant monsters that we encounter are fairly forgettable. The ones I did like were the chameleon lizards, the lizard-like creatures that camouflage onto a tree, and the bug monsters with the geode stomachs. Everything else was just kind of typical giant monster stuff. We do see some of the creatures from Kong Skull Island, like the giant moss-covered yaks or water buffalo, and the skull lizard things, but that's pretty much it.
Those things were actually pretty cool. Everything else, I kind of agree. They could have spruced up the monsters a little bit.
I think the reason why the monsters look a little more generic is because the animation is combining more 2D and CGI elements. That's why everything had to be easier to animate, because, you know, there's that myth of more detail means better animation, when that's not even the case. But the combination of 2D and CGI doesn't always look good, and the compositing looks a little wonky from time to time. It's like when the characters are running and there's an obvious CGI background, or just like a scrolling effect. It doesn't look good. By the time we get to the latter episodes, it looks better. The camera work is better, but it's definitely rough. I do agree with you, though, that the best episode of the show so far is episode 7, where we take a look into Kong's history with one of the island folk that live there and his friendship with one of them, which is all told through visual storytelling and subtitles. No obnoxious, quippy energy or constant joke throwing at the audience. It's quiet, it's reserved, and the action and drama are perfectly mixed. It's a shame that this wasn't more of the show, because this show was oddly marketed as an adult animated series when it feels more like it's aimed at teenagers and young adults. The only thing that makes it adult, quote unquote, is the graphic gore and violence that occurs from time to time. Even then, it's not even that dramatic compared to shows like Vox Machina or Invincible, where they just can and will go the distance with the violence.
I don't understand why this was marketed more towards adults when it feels a bit more like a Saturday morning cartoon, though I looked up the writer and the series creator, Brian Duffield, and I'm not seeing any animation credits, so kind of explains why there's a bit of dissonance between the animation style and the writing at times.
Well, it makes a lot of sense that Brian Duffield is the creative heart of this show because he was also behind the 2020 movie Love and Monsters with Dylan O'Brien. So it makes a lot more sense where the tone was going throughout the whole show because of that connection and with 2020's Underwater and 2017's The Babysitter.
That does make a lot of sense.
I just wish I liked this show more. Maybe if I give it a rewatch, I'll come out with a more positive reaction to it. And I don't mean to feel like I'm trying to rush through this just to get to Lonely Castle in the Mirror and Deep Sea. I just don't have too much to say about these first 8 episodes, which is a shame because I like the idea of a TV series based around Skull Island, and I like the cast of characters that we have, including the actors that star Nicholas Cantu, Mae Whitman, Darren Barnett, Benjamin Bratt, Betty Gilpin, Phil Lamar, Frida Wolf, and Tanya Gunati. But it just wasn't my cup of tea. I perfectly get why some people that I've seen on my timeline and critics that I know love this show. It definitely connected with them on a level that it did with me. And that's cool. Not every show is going to connect with us the same way, shape, or form.
My final thought on Skull Island is kind of the same thing that you said about the Monsterverse as a whole. I'm a bigger fan of the Monsterverse than most people, but they've never had that like home run success yet. I think the closest they get is either Kong Skull Island or, for me at least, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Honestly, the show represents perfectly how I feel about the whole Monsterverse franchise. I don't like a lot of it, but there are some points and moments that I do like about it.
That's a pretty succinct description.
I think what this show needed was what we got in Skull Island. We needed a John C. Reilly character, where, you know, in Skull Island, he played the World War II fighter pilot survivor.
Oh, yes.
He was the real heart of that movie compared to the more action adjacent Tom Hiddleston and Emily Blunt. And it's a shame that this show wasn't working for me because I could have absolutely seen this show take notes from the 90s Godzilla cartoon series that was based off of the Roland Emmerich 90s Godzilla movie, because it almost reaches that tone at points, but it just misses the mark. But who knows? If any of this sounds interesting to you, give it a watch, make up your own opinion about it.
Well said.
But now we will journey on to The Lonely Castle in the Mirror. If you've been paying attention to anything that was happening at the Annecy Film Festival, this was one of those movies that was playing there. It's based off of the novels by Mizuki Sugimura, and the adaptation is directed by Keiichi Hara, who did 2016's Annecy Award-winning Miss Hokusai and the 2020 gem Birthday Wonderland, or it's also known as The Wonderland, depending on what part of the world you live on. It's also written by Miho Maru, with music by Keiichi Hara collaborator Harumi Fuki, and is produced by A1 Pictures, and was distributed in the States by G Kids. We follow a group of junior high students who somehow walk through these individual mirrors in their house to find themselves at this castle that is hosted and owned by this young girl in a wolf mask. These are Kokoro, Aki, Rion, Subaru, Fuka, Masamune, and Urashino. They are told by the girl in the wolf mask that calls herself the Wolf Queen that they must find a key, and if they have a wish when they find said key, it will come true. The twists are they only have a year to find the key, and they can only enter the castle during a certain period of time that is allowed via the time schedule in Japan. What will happen with these kids, and why are they here? That is the overall journey that we will be taking when we are talking about this movie. Now, content warning, this movie does deal with a lot of themes of bullying, isolation, and loneliness. And there is one occurrence in the third act where it's revealed that one character was almost assaulted. So viewer's discretion is advised if you want to check out this movie.
So, Mike, what did you think about this movie?
I think on the whole, I quite enjoyed it. As I was watching it, I jokingly called this extracurricular isekai, since it's not like they're stuck in the castle the whole time. They can go back and forth to their own respective homes. But on the whole, I like the characters for the most part. I like the sort of themes exploring loneliness, bullying, the difficulty it can be to make friends, all of that good stuff.
So as mentioned, the main driving force of this movie is the commentary of these junior high aged students are dealing with. And the thing that keeps this whole mystery puzzle together and what makes it fun to put the pieces together are these stakes at hand. They have a year. They give you hints of all the different students and like what is up with them and what they have had to deal with and why they were probably chosen to come to this castle. It's rare that we find a mystery being the main plot focus for a anime film that stars a bunch of junior high students. It starts slow. It takes about 30 to 40 minutes to slowly start building up everything, because we go from the seven or so students building up cliques and friend groups among one another until one of the students calls out the fact that they make fun of him and were basically doing what others would be doing to them at the school. And then as the kids become more connected with one another, we learn the first major twist, which is that while they do go to the same school, it is not the same time period, which means that they are from different universes. And I messaged Mike saying, the Lonely Castle in the Multiverse of Madness, because every movie, heavens forbid, can try to not have a multiverse situation. I'm sure it's part of the original story, but it's just funny how that works, because they do build it up, but I still laughed a little when the twist came up.
What's funny about this is I watched this movie like a few hours before Cameron did, and yet we had the exact same thought at that point in the film when the kids were trying to figure out their connection. And obviously, multiverse is not the correct answer. The truth gets revealed a little bit later, but
right. You find out that they are from different time periods and different like span of years from one another. Like when one was 10, the other would have just been born and what have you. And looking back at the film, they do drop certain hints about them being from different time periods because of how they talk to one another or particular interests that they talk about among one another. and how one will be like, oh, I've never heard of that video game, but the other one will be like, oh, but this is like the most popular video game of all time. And what connects each of the kids is the main theme of the film, which is talking about the bullying crisis in schools in Japan and just in the world in general. And while this movie is definitely very blunt and forward with its commentary, I don't mind it. It's interesting to see how they approach this topic, because when I was leaving high school, I graduated right before the big social media bomb dropped, before like Facebook, Twitter, and what have you took over, and bullying didn't really happen at my school. It was very uncommon, but it was like self-contained, and there was no social media boom to push it into the more extreme levels of what can happen these days.
I was just entering high school when I first made like my Facebook account, and everyone in high school was on social media, but I don't think bullying, at least in my district, was ever, it never elevated to like any of those extremes.
I mean, good Lord, some of these kids in this movie were mean. Like, holy shnikes.
That one girl, I forget her name, from Kokoro's school, she was just brutal.
She was the worst. Then we start to learn about why each of the individual kids were having like issues at school. Like, Kokoro was getting bullied by this one girl who wanted to isolate her, which being alone was not so much of an issue when I was in high school, but now with the arrival of social media, it seems like bullying and feeling alone and isolated from everyone else is a bigger deal. Like, this movie was made to commentate on Japan's issues with isolation and bullying in school, but it handled it with a very good hand, calling out the fact that some teachers are like, oh, I'm sure it's just a misunderstanding. There's no problems here. Yeah, that guy was the worst. Then, like, some kids just got bullied because they thought they were lying, or they're like, they were too smart, or they stood out. Or, again, one of the kids was heavyset, and one had a bunch of pressure because she was told as a kid that she was a prodigy with the piano, and that just wrecked her life. And then one character goes through attempted assault, which was uncomfortable, which was a point, because this stuff sadly happens in life. It's executed well, so it doesn't come off as tasteless or tone deaf.
I think I agree with that. And this is going to be one of those movies that I don't know if I'm going to revisit anytime soon, but the more I think about it, the more its themes start to like resonate with me.
That was the thing with me about this movie. It's like, I thought it was pretty good when I saw it, and then the last third got to me when all the characters were reconnecting and Kokoro was saving everyone from the wolf, and you find out who the wolf girl or the wolf queen is. It might not...
It has a bit of a rocky start, but it does stick the landing at the end.
And I like that. It just hit me at the end, and I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, no, I like this movie. Its animation is pretty good. Not my favorite. I like the environmental and background artwork more than the animation quality. Even though it looks pretty good, it's just tough to go from Production IG with Miss Hokusai to A1 Pictures. And A1 Pictures can and does make good-looking stuff. It just didn't work for me at times. Felt a little flat. I mean, it's just tough because Production IG is just one of the best animation houses ever.
I'm looking at Keiichi Hara's filmography, and stylistically, this does kind of feel a bit like a departure from some of the other projects that he's worked on. Like, he's done a bunch of movies for Crayon Shin-chan and Doraemon.
Yeah, yeah.
The character designs in this feel a bit more standard compared to his other works.
Which is interesting because the character designer
was the same person who did the Wonderland character designs, Leah Kovshinoff, and she also did artwork for the Ghost in the Shell SAC 2045 series. Maybe it's just execution, or it's just another side effect of the fact that the Japanese animation industry, just like the American animation industry, is running its artists into the ground. Not that this looks like a bad movie. I'm not saying it does look bad. It's just very there. It's something that doesn't visually stand out. But I do really like this movie. I think it handles its themes well. I like the characters. I like the writing. The last third is pretty much the best part of the movie. And it's interesting to see a mystery-like movie, because we don't really get a lot of those, especially with Japanese animation. It's not just a traditional coming-of-age story.
The mystery aspect is, I think, probably the most unique thing about this. And it is fun. When you are given just as much information as the characters, it makes the story a bit more engaging.
Agreed. Nothing's more annoying than being ahead of the characters and just being like, get to it, get on with it. But if you could somehow find a way to watch this movie before it hits Blu-ray in September, then I definitely recommend giving it a watch. Luckily, we have a distributor that has picked up a lot of movies from the Annecy Film Festival, and more people will have a way to watch this movie, which is why I'm so worried that no one's going to pick up Deep Sea. But do you have any closing thoughts about Lonely Castle in the Mirror before we head on to Deep Sea?
Just a shout out to G Kids for this year in particular, picking up the pace a bit with their distribution of more foreign titles.
It's interesting because they were at one point doing their whole like, oh, we'll just pick up the Japanese movies because those are the only ones that people sadly watch, which is such a bummer. Though they've picked up like Unicorn Wars, they've had the first Slam Dunk, they have Blue Giant, they have the Ernest and Celestine movie, A Trip to Gibberishia, coming out this year, and Chicken for Linda, which is a French animated film. So I can't wait and hope that they pick up some other films, because I will be shocked if some distributor is not thinking about picking up Deep Sea.
Yeah, so let's talk about Deep Sea, because this is a movie from China directed by...
It's by the same director who did the super influential Monkey King Hero is Back from 2015, which was like the film to kickstart the next era of CGI feature animation for China. It's by the same director, Tian Xiaoping, and we follow a young girl who is on a cruise ship with her family, going through some personal stuff, and at one point finds herself cast off the ship, but she then ends up in this underwater submarine / restaurant run by a human with a crew of walruses, seals, and otters. And his name is Nanhe. So it ends up with our female lead, Jin Zhu. It is her job to find out where she is, how to get back home, find this creature called the Hijinx, who may or may not know where her mom is. And a lot of people were looking forward to this movie, because when you saw the teaser trailers for this film, it was just like, wow, how on earth did y'all pull this off? This beautiful, lush combination of Chinese ink paintings, watercolors, just beautiful, vibrant painting-like details to the CGI figures, to the fish, the ship, the surroundings, and the inhabitants, who are also very expressive characters. And they're not just like fat characters or fat jokes and what have you. And there's definitely a lot going on with this movie. And it starts to sprinkle in a ton of little details of what is actually going on.
So for a lot of this movie, it is working on dream logic. So if you're looking for a reason and what have you behind it, don't, because not every movie set with a fantastical hook or premise needs to be grounded. We don't need the likes of BuzzFeed's like top 10 plot holes in your favorite Disney movies coming in and ruining the magic and wonder of animation.
If anything, this movie, I kind of compare this to like an aquatic version of The Wizard of Oz. That starts to make more sense, like once you get towards the end of the movie and you find out more of like what's really going on. But as you're experiencing this thing, it's honestly just a feast for the eyes. Every single scene in this movie, you could pause it and frame it on your wall. It's just gorgeous to look at.
It's just absurd. I wonder what kind of tech they were using to make all of this work, especially for Nanhe, because he might be the most interesting animated character of the year.
He's certainly the most expressive.
Golly, I don't know how they got his squash and stretch CGI model to do all of that. His movements are amazing. The way he is just so energetic and how his mouth and his head moves. Like, I was not in the best mood when I was watching this, but then when he showed up on screen and you could just see how expressive he is, it was mind-blowing, because all I could think about, just like with Elemental and Across the Spider-Verse, was like, how the heck did you pull that off with this character? It literally looks like they took a page from Denny Tartakovsky's approach to character animation from the Hotel Transylvania films, and they just upped it. The cinematography of this movie is amazing. It's dynamic. It feels grand, which makes me wish I saw this movie in a theater, because this needed to be on a giant theater, and I wish we didn't see this through just the Tribeca at Home Film Festival selection, which I thank them for putting this film up there. But man, I just wish and hope that this movie hits the big screen at some point, either by Wellgo USA or G-Kids or Shout Factory maybe. But like, if you're going to take away anything from this movie, it's that the animation is a new milestone for China's animation scene. And all I can say is, I hope the animators were treated well, because as we've learned from the Across the Spider-Verse fiasco, amazing and groundbreaking animation cannot be rushed.
Exactly.
So we've talked about like how the whimsical the world is. It has a little bit of that Spirited Away spirit in it, especially with the fish people customers on the ship and just how everything works. But what's the story? And it's really about Shenzhou, who is dealing with the fact that it feels like her fault that her mom left her father and her father remarried, and that she's feeling, just like in Lonely Castle, alone, because no one is giving her the attention. She just feels like she's stuck in a really bad place, which, considering all that is going on right now, can be very easy to be stuck in a place where you feel like there's just no light at the end of the tunnel. It's all darkness. It's all misery. You feel for her. And it sucks that she has to deal with Nanhe, who is doing everything in his power to use the hijinks for his own ambitions, and then just wants Shenzhou to leave, to get out of there. But as time goes on, like a good story does, the two start to bond and connect with one another. And it turns into like a story of like ambition and just going through the troubles just to get to those bright points. And it turned into like a film that could be a little chaotic to a intensely deep experience.
The second half of this movie is when it really reaches like that emotional height, and seeing the growth of Nanhi and Shenchu. Seeing their bond growing stronger as the story progresses was just wonderful.
This movie also reminds, I don't know if you've seen this movie, but have you ever seen The Fall?
I don't think so.
So The Fall was not the TV show with Gillian Anderson and Jamie Dornan. It was by the same director who did The Cell, Tarsem Singh, that starred Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn and Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, right. That.
Tarsem made a film afterwards called The Fall, and from 2006. And it was about a young girl who was in a hospital who also befriended a man who was a, if I remember correctly, a stunt performer. And he would tell her tales to get her through her stay at the hospital, and how it turned into this surreal, magical journey. And The Fall is just one of my favorite movies. I'd highly recommend if you can find a copy of it, or I hope they re-release it because it's super expensive to find. You find out that they keep flashing to what looks like Nanhe pulling up something while in the water, saying like, I'm going to make sure you're okay. Just hold on. And when you get to the third act and you find out that like the Red Phantom was a Shenzhou's jacket that she hid herself from the world with, which the Red Phantom could also represent like depression and misery and what have you.
All of your negative thoughts just like bubbling at the surface.
And then you realize and find out, and this is why I compared it to The Fall, that the whole fantastical submarine restaurant, which, well, was a dream because of an art book that she saw. And you're right, it is very much like Wizard of Oz, because a lot of the characters that you see on the ship at the beginning are pretty much represented in this whimsical world and dream that she's in. It turned into like probably one of the most somber endings. Like it had a light, like an optimistic end note to it. But you find out that Nanhe, who was the clown on the cruise ship, was the only one to jump in to save her and keep her alive throughout being stranded out in the ocean, and kept her going by pretending to be in this submarine like whimsical world. It was really heartbreaking to see how both of them almost made it, but he knew he wasn't going to make it. And you pick up on those little details again throughout really good story beats. Like when you hear him say, oh yeah, this painting is of my hometown and this is why it's great. Sadly, I'm never going to be able to go there again.
Mm.
And you find out like, okay, so what happened? What did he do? Until it hits that Nanhe died at the end. He got over his selfish nature of wanting to be big and famous to make sure she got out okay. Like, it just hit me in a place that I was not expecting. And since I was in such a weird, bad mood that night, I was just so vulnerable to the twist of what happens and the message of keep pushing through the darkness to find those bright spots, even if they are small. Because boy, did I need that after just a chaotic 12 hours.
Yeah, I was kind of in a weird funk yesterday too. Watching this movie, that ending is, it's bittersweet, but really a powerful one.
It was just great. It like shot up to my like second favorite film of the year in terms of in everything, not just animation, but live action as well. I really want people to see this movie. It's unfortunate by the time this podcast goes up, it's probably going to be gone off of the virtual Tribeca thing. So I'm hoping there's enough interest for people to pick it up. This is one of those movies from around the world that people should absolutely see. I get some of the complaints I've seen that it is chaotic and it takes a little bit, almost a little too long for Nanhe to be likable, but this movie represents
why I love animation, why I love filmmaking. Someone with a super ambitious drive said, I want to do this. I want to push us to the next level of animation and storytelling through China's renaissance in the CGI theatrical animation scene. And that's good. We need to constantly evolve the art form, the medium, to tell more stories like Deep Sea. If somehow you can find a way to watch this movie, please do.
Yes, we say this often on the podcast, but animation is supposed to be a medium with no limits. And, you know, between this, Across the Spider-Verse, even Elemental, other animated films coming out this year, I really want to see how far we can stretch, like, the possibilities. I want to see different styles, different genres even, anything that will keep animation alive. And alive, not just in the near future, but, you know, generations ahead of us.
Well, the fact that as we are recording this, Spider-Verse and Elemental shot back up to the top of the box office, and with the success of the Super Mario Brothers movie, people are interested in animation. They just also want to see something that is compelling and different from what they normally see. We've already hit a pretty varied batch of movies this year, and I can't wait for people to see Nimona, because that's also just a fantastic movie. So we'll just have to see. I hope someone picks up Deep Sea anyway, like even if it's a streaming service pickup.
And you already kind of teased what our next episode is going to be. We've got Nimona and a little film called Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. That'll be a fun double feature.
Oh, I can't wait to see Ruby Gilman. Like I said, I've already seen Nimona a couple times. It's worth the hype, and animation is starting to blossom more this year when it feels like it was just taking forever to get going. But now that it's getting going, the getting is good.
Agreed. Until next time, Cameron, where can everyone find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at CamsEyeView. I have a website called CamsEyeView.biz where I review animated films and shows from around the world called The Other Side of Animation. I also have a Patreon at patreon.com/CamsEyeView. That's where you can find me.
And you guys can find me on Twitter at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, on Podchaser. Subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Animation. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.